This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Naz, good morning, first of all, to all the fathers out there. Happy Father's Day. And to Naz, to you, happy Father's Day. Good morning, Naz.
Same to you, Wally. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much. Also joining us this morning, Lou Franceschetti. Lou, good morning and happy Father's Day to you as well.
Good morning, gentlemen, and likewise to both of you.
Yeah, it's certainly, Naz, every Father's Day I take the opportunity. We grew up together. I remember your dad, a passionate Leafs fan, and so many great memories of sitting watching Leaf games with your dad. I miss my dad. If I recall correctly, Naz, our dads passed away on the same day, not the same year, but the same day, November the 1st. And now we've gotten to the next generation. I know your boy Matt's got some, is a father. My daughter has blessed me with a couple of grandkids. And Lou, I know your family is flourishing as well. So to all the fathers out there, also special Father's Day to my father-in-law and my son-in-law. So I probably missed somebody along the way. I apologize, but it's a special day for all the fathers out there, and we wish all the fathers a fantastic day. Naz, wow, what a Sunday last Sunday.
Yeah. what a job the Canadian did. Nick Taylor. Awesome.
Nick Taylor, just remarkable. You and I spent some time at Oakdale last Sunday. I hung into the bitter end. Got the opportunity to be interviewed. We're going to play a clip on it. Rather than me go through it all again, I don't think it can do a better job than Sam and Jane did on the morning Zoom show the other morning. So I'm going to ask our producer, Owen, to tee up a clip. I was interviewed on the morning show by Sam and Jane earlier on in the week, and I can't say it any better than I said it that morning. Owen, if you can go ahead.
BC's Nick Taylor made golf history on the weekend, becoming the first Canadian in 69 years to win the Canadian Open. And our Wally Rigabon from the Naz and Wally Sports Hour was there to witness it all. Wally joins us now. Hey, Wally.
Good morning. How's everybody this morning?
Well, we're great, and we're so glad that you let us know you were there yesterday. Tell us all about it.
I've got to thank Golf Canada for treating me well, and they gave me access. I was it was just the most surreal moment, the highlight of my my life when it comes to sports. I was right next to the green when Nick Taylor on the fourth playoff hole. You couldn't have asked for more drama. And he sinks a 72-foot putt for eagle. You couldn't script it. I completely lost my emotions. I was standing next to Mike Weir and Corey Connors and Graham Dillette, and I just rushed the green. I was headed towards Nick Taylor, and right in front of me, I don't know if you've heard the story, right in front of me was Adam Hadwin, who's one of Nick Taylor's best friends. He's a Canadian PGA golfer in his own right. He was in the thick of the mix as well, and he lost his emotions too. He ran onto the green with a bottle of champagne. I was right behind him, and then he got a security guard, a whole bunch of them popped out of nowhere and just tackled a PGA Tour pro and Nick Taylor's best friend to the ground, and I was there. I said, "Oh my God, I'm next."
I was just going to say, Wally, you were about
I go, there was this 6'10" Toronto's finest, probably 9,000 pounds, who gave me a glare. And then I just came to my senses and realized maybe I got no business being where
right.
I am right now. And I sort of backed off, and I stood on the green, took a whole bunch of pictures, and didn't realize it till this morning. I went through my pictures this morning. I go, oh my God, I got a picture right behind Adam Hadwin, just with champagne spray all over over the picture. It was just remarkable.
That's amazing. And had you been another second or two before Adam, you would have been the guy we were talking about for all the wrong reasons.
I'd probably be in the hospital. I'm a little bit older than Adam Hadwin, and probably not in as good a shape, so they probably would have had to send somebody to take me home. But it was, if I can get personal for just a minute, it was just incredibly personal for me. It was emotional. I'm a passionate golf fan. I've been a passionate golf fan my entire life. I got the opportunity, thanks to Golf Canada, to return to Oakdale this week for the first time, second time in 59 years. I caddied there when I was 9 years old, 10 years old. And
amazing.
And when I got there on Tuesday, they let me walk around the course, and I walked around it at sunset, and there was this amazing Canadian golfer who was an assistant pro at the time at Oakdale. I don't know if you've ever heard the name George Knutson. I caddied a couple of times for George Knutson in the mid-1960s. He's one of the greatest Canadian golfers of all time. And when I arrived there on Tuesday afternoon, I just wanted to walk to the spot where I'd spent some time with George shagging balls for him in the sunset back in 1965. And I took a picture of myself. And I tell people they think I'm crazy when I tell this story, but it's not. I just felt his spirit there. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, something crazy is going to happen this week. Something special is going to happen this week. And when it did, 72-foot putt, eagle on the fourth playoff hole. I mean, these things don't happen. They just don't happen.
No, thank you so much for sharing your story. We love that you were there, and we love your passion. Thank you.
And I was wearing a Zoomer hat.
Oh, well, you buried the lead, Wally. That was the best part. There you go.
Even better. Thanks for the story, Wally. That's really awesome.
Thanks for letting me share it. Thank you.
And you can hear Wally every Sunday morning at 9 on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour right here on Zoomer Radio.
Anyways, Naz, you were there with me for most of the afternoon. What do you take away from a pretty, pretty, pretty remarkable Canadian Open?
What a fascinating finish, though. That was the best. I got home in time to watch the playoff, the fourth hole, right?
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. 72-foot putt, and they said there was a double break on the putt.
Yeah,
making that putt is almost impossible, and he did
it. Nick Taylor could have stayed out there and tried that putt 100 more times and probably wouldn't have made it. Anyways, we're going to talk to John. It's a major championship Sunday. On major championship Sundays, U.S. Open at the L.A. Country Club, North Course. We always talk to John Steinbrenner, so I'm sure he'll have a couple of thoughts about the Canadian Open. Gentlemen, it's our last show of the season. We've made it to the end of our ninth season. God willing, we'll be back in September for our 10th season. But Stanley Cup got decided this week, Lou, and the Las Vegas Knights are now the Stanley Cup champions, sixth year in the league. Sort of rubs it in the Toronto Maple Leafs' face a little bit, but your takeaways from the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Knights certainly through four series were the best team. I don't think there's any question about that. Are they now the model for the for all the other general managers in the league? Is that how you have to build a team to be successful, Luke?
Well, first and foremost, Wally, I don't think you would have got hit because you never go on the corner, so that's why the security guard never would have hit you. But it was a great feeling watching it at home. It brought my hair were standing on edge just watching that thing, especially to a well-known Canadian. The model that the Las Vegas Knights have built started from day one. George McPhee did a great job in Washington, and he knew exactly what to go after in the draft. There were a couple of bonehead plays by certain organizations, by Florida, I would think. I think they took a 2-on-1 package by letting one of the other players go, and Marcisso and Riley Smith. Also, I think Columbus let William Carlson go to protect someone else. Were probably major mistakes that they wish that they could take back. But you look at the way this team is built, their defensemen are all big, they're strong, and the key thing, they're all mobile. There was not one of them that got outskated. There was not one of them that got beat out of the corner. And you look at the forwards that they have right from day one with Reeves and Kolasar and Carrier. They knew they weren't going to get a pushed around. And what they built stability. They built depth among their four lines. And they weren't scared to make major moves, which I hope Brad Treveling is listening to this, on their star players. They were willing to move out players that were well-established to fill other pieces of the puzzle. And they were big. I guess that's the one thing that I could say about this team. Is they were big, they weren't going to get pushed around, and they could skate. So it was a delight watching them play and building that team right from scratch. And you can see what happened the first year under the coach Gerard Gallant, and they weren't scared to make changes with their coaches. Three coaches in the first 6 years, that's not unheard of, especially when you go to the playoffs every single year and one year to the finals.
Yeah, you're talking about you segued me right into my next comment. Good job, Lou, and I'll go to Naz. You know, Las Vegas wasn't scared to change coaches, but Tree Living's here. It doesn't look like Sheldon keeps going anywhere. Naz, it looks like he's going to be our coach next year. Is that the way you're seeing it?
That was my gut feel from the beginning. Remember, Wally, I predicted
you did.
He'd be
absolutely
back, right?
Yeah, you also predicted a Canadian was going to win the Canadian Open when we had Lawrence Applebaum on the show. Lawrence Applebaum, CEO of Golf Canada, was a little bit taken aback. And I said, hey, look, I go, Naz is not DC. He's right more than he's wrong. So you see, we're going to start the season with Keefe. He's not going anywhere. They're going to extend his contract?
They're going to extend his contract for 2 years, I heard. So it's a three-year deal he's going to have in place.
Lou, Sorry, go ahead, Naz. Apologize.
No, I was just talking about the defense of Vegas. They had Theodore, Martinez, and Petrangelo. Three studs back on defense. And I think that's the way you build a team, from the goalie out, right? So hope we do this in Toronto.
Well, it's tough to find those guys in the free agent market, but somehow you got to dig them up. And we've been crying the same river here in Toronto for a long, long time. We got to get bigger and tougher on the defensive side. We really, you know, Muzzin was an attempt to do that. Other than that, it's like we seem to be, you know, we don't have a lot of toughness and size back there. So Tree Living's got some work. Lou, the smart money is betting that Austin Matthews the rumors that are coming out, and these are probably being leaked by both sides because there was a big meeting down in Arizona, but everybody's saying Matthews wants to stay in Toronto. Those leaks seem to be coming from both sides, and the issue is, is he going to sign, and is he going to sign a max-term deal, and when is he going to do it, Lou?
Yes, those are the rumors that I hear. But what also I'm hearing is that he wants a short-term deal with McKinnon-type money. But the Leafs want to go 7 or 8 years. They want to lock him up well into his 30s. So that's going to be the big sticking point. And we shall see how much time they actually take on doing this, because they've got other two players that they've got to take care of also, and Marner and Nylander, because more or less Brad's hands are tied right now. They both have no movement clauses. July 1st, with Nylander having a 10-team no-trade list going into effect. So, again, let's go back. I'm not a Sheldon Keefe fan. I wouldn't sign him to an extension, but, you know, MLSC's got all the money they can throw around, and they've got to get bigger up front. If they don't get bigger up front, These guys aren't going anywhere. Mind you, let's get a goalie in there that can stop the puck.
Certainly, I like the you know, it'd be great if we could get Matthews on a max deal. If he goes shorter term, I like the psychology of that, to be honest with you, because then he's betting on himself, and he's saying the cap, his agent saying the cap's going to go up over the course of the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, and it probably will as revenues go up. And he's betting on himself, saying, you know what, I'm going to continue to be one of the best players in the league, and if I sign a max deal now for 7, 8 years, whatever it is, they'll probably get what, 12, 13 million. But if I, you know, if I got to come back into the market 4 or 5 years from now and I'm still one of the best players in the league, then maybe it's 16, 17, 18 million at that point in time. Naz, I'll throw it to you, and then to Lou, and then we'll take it to break. Naz?
That's what Austin Matthews is trying to do, right, is shorten it so he is betting on himself. And I think that's where he's angling too. So look for him to sign a 3 to 5 year deal extension with the Leafs.
Wally,
Lou,
you're a so-called lawyer. Do contracts work out?
Is that a criticism, Lou?
No, it's not. It really isn't.
Okay.
Do contracts work out the same in all sports? Because there's a way around this, if Matthews, and I guess the league allows this, that he can sign a 7-year deal if he wants and then opt out after 2 or 3 years to get full max of the money. Because I know other sports do it. So I'm just curious on why I haven't heard that with hockey. And is that allowed with negotiating NHL contracts?
Gotta be honest with you, Lou, that I think that's a pretty good question. I don't have the answer to that, I'll be quite frank with you.
But I think it goes towards the Cowboys.
If he signs a max year contract, let's say 7, I think if he signs with the Leafs under the CBA, he's entitled to one more year. That's the advantage the Leafs have, I believe.
Yeah.
I stand to be corrected. But if he's got an opt-out after 2 years, so then your max contract is worthless. So what's the point?
You're right.
You know?
It is worth it, but
Leafs want to tie him up, or for that matter, any team in the NHL wants to tie up their franchise player for as long as possible. It's just because, you know, a lot of the economics of what Dubas was anticipating and all the other general managers went out the window during COVID, right? Because they had anticipated. They had anticipated the cap and revenues would go up. That was, and, you know, nobody could have predicted COVID was going to happen. And, you know, you want to tie this guy up for 8 years. You don't want him opting out after 2 or 3. It's pointless
I don't think they can opt out, eh? I don't think they can opt out.
It wouldn't make any sense.
In basketball, you can do that.
You can do that in basketball, Ness?
Yes, you can opt out, okay. But not in hockey. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, what I'm asking is that you can go out and renegotiate when he's ready to opt out. So let's say he's got a 7-year deal and he opts out after 2 or after 3 years. You can go in into your second year and renegotiate your last five years.
At market value. Yeah.
What the market value is going to be or the price of the salary cap is going to go up to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know if the CBA provides for that. General contractual privileges do. You sign a contract, you can always change it any time you want, subject to whatever the collective bargaining agreement says. And I can't say I'm an expert on the NHL CBA. But it's a legitimate point. I've got to think that Austin Matthews and his representatives and Brad Treliving and Brandon Shanahan are going to get creative as they can possibly be in that contract. But the good news is it seems both sides seem to be leaking to the press that Austin Matthews wants to stay in Toronto. And that's pretty positive. I put crazy stuff about you got to get rid of Austin Matthews. That's lunacy. He's your franchise player. He's what you built the team around. And you ain't going to get anywhere near his value on the trade market. That's just crazy talk. Anyways, on that note, we got Canada and the United States in a Nations League CONCACAF final tonight at 8:30 p.m. in Las Vegas. And who better than to chat about that with our resident soccer expert, Carmen and Marc Antonio. And then when we come back, we'll also give away some Pizzaville coupons. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, also in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. We also are live audio streaming this morning, not video streaming. We're not in studio. We're doing it remotely today at www.zoomerradio.com. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend Carmen Marcantonio. Carmen, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, Walter and Naz. Happy Father's Day to both of you and all the listeners. It's a special day today for all of us.
It certainly is, and I'm remiss, Carmen. I should have started with wishing you a happy Father's Day, so I'll overcome being my forgetfulness, and I wish you sincerely a fantastic Father's Day, and also you're also a grandfather as well, and that's pretty special. So all the best to you and to your family. Carmine, there's a big soccer game tonight. It's the CONCACAF final, a position Canada hasn't won this, I believe, since 2000, and it's been 23 years. Canada played against, they're playing the United States, our arch nemesis, the United States, in Las Vegas tonight at the Allianz Stadium. It's going to be a tough game for Canada. The U.S. has home field advantage. But Canada looked, from what I understand, got some criticisms of the Canadian national men's program, not the players, but you can't seem to find these games on TV. Couldn't find the Canada-Panama game. You got to join some streaming site or you got to pay to watch, which, it's Canada's men's national soccer team. Why these games aren't on TSN or Sportsnet or the CBC or CTV, I have no idea. But I saw the highlights, world-class goal from Alphonso Davies. I don't know how much of that game you saw, but Panama is certainly a serious adversary, and Canada did well, and we're in the finals. I mean,
yes, just a small correction, because well, you were referring to that Canada won the Gold Cup over 20 years ago.
Correct, yes.
But this game is not the Gold Cup. That's going to take place in July for the CONCACAF, the tournament, the whole tournament. This is the Nations Cup, which is basically in Europe, all the confederation have the Nations League Cup, League Final. In Europe right now, the final is between Croatia and Spain. Italy lost to Spain, and Croatia beat Holland, and Holland is hosting it. So this is the equivalent of CONCACAF, and in the final, as you mentioned, will be U.S. versus Canada. U.S. beat Mexico 3-0 in Vegas. That was more a boxing match. I saw the highlights of that game. There was, I don't know, 80,000 people in Las Vegas, and U.S. won it handily. And so did Canada beating Panama, as you mentioned. This Canadian team is for real. I feel that the players have matured. I think from the World Cup, I think the coaching staff and John Herdman has learned a lesson. I think I've seen him more subdued, a bit more mature himself. And I think it's going to be a fantastic game. U.S., I feel, like you mentioned, they have their home advantage in front of, again, another 60, 70, 80,000 people. I don't know what the capacity is for Las Vegas, the stadium, but I'm sure it's going to be full to capacity. But I feel that Canada will give the U.S. A big game. And I don't think U.S. has beaten Canada since 2021. I was reading that probably it's been 2-3 years that Canada has tied or beat the U.S. So I fancy our boys.
Carmine, before I turn back over to you, Ness, I promised our listeners we'd be giving away some Pizzaville coupons. My Zoomer brain took over this morning, and I forgot that during the commercial break. So I'm gonna keep our producer Owen happy, and thanks to the Contardi family at Pizzaville who have kept us on the air for 9 years. Thank you so much. They are in the spirit of our last show of the season. They want us to give away some gift coupons. There's three of them. So to the first listeners that call in, these are the numbers: 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. Please call in. Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
The rankings in FIFA show the U.S. at ranked 13 and Canada 47. Is that a little out of whack, Carmen?
Well, Naz, I think so. If we look at, recently, at least in the last year or two, Canada won CONCACAF for qualifying in the World Cup. And so I think Canada's come a long way, I think a lot closer to the U.S. I think the U.S. a bit overranked at 13, I feel. And Canada, I think, is way down. They should be up more, meaning they should be ranked in the 20s, I believe, because right now Canada... I'm a believer of this Canadian team because they play good soccer, good football, and they could give a game to even the top teams. I mean, I feel that if Canada were to play Italy today, Italy would have a hard time beating this Canadian team. And Canada, we've seen it in the World Cup. I mean, Belgium, that was ranked number one, had a difficult time to win that game. And in all fairness, Canada was the better team on the day, and they could have won. They should have won the game. If we look back at the World Cup, there were two penalties that were denied to the Canadian team, and then they gave up a goal late in the game. And Canada was also to Morocco. They tied Morocco, if I'm not mistaken. No, they lost 2-1. But they hit a crossbar. They almost tied it towards the end. They gave Morocco, and we know Morocco came in third in the World Cup. And they lost badly to Croatia, and we know what happened there. But again, they also gave Croatia a game. And I think this is a matured Canadian national team. If we look at the average age of our players, they're in the mid-20s, we got Bojan, the goalkeeper, he's a bit older. Atiba Hutchinson, by the way, guys, this could be his last game. Atiba is four, he's the captain. Yep. And I feel that this is probably the swan song, as they said, probably the last game. Hopefully, he's going to be leaving the Canadian team a winner for this cup. And but you know, Davis, at the prime of their game, Buchanan, Kone, a young man that is playing in England, Watford, Alistair Johnson. I don't know if you guys know, but he won the treble in at Celtics. He's starting every game at a right fullback, and they won the league and the League Cup and the Scottish Cup. So we have a very, very good team, and you know, Eustáquio playing in Portugal with Porto and starting Richie Lareya, best player for TFC, and I could go on and on. Well, we got a good mix of veterans and young players that are doing really well in Europe and in the MLS.
Well, I think this Canadian team certainly on this side of the pond, and as you say, they held their own against some of the best teams in the world. And the team they lost against, Croatia, is, you know, they're in the Nations League final today against Spain, and they could win and be the best team in Europe this go round. So I think this Canadian team is now shown that they can compete at the highest level. And on any given day, you know, they have a couple of breaks go their way, they can beat any team in the world. It's certainly a remarkable, remarkable time as we head towards the 2026 World Cup, of which part will be played in Canada. That's exciting beyond belief for us passionate soccer fans, or as you prefer kind of minute football. And Lou, I'll give you an opportunity to engage with Kadmina.
Kadmina, good morning and happy Father's Day. I'm going to admit here that I haven't followed Canada soccer as much as I should. But I have seen a lot of the Italian under-20 team in the last month or so. And obviously with them going to the finals and losing 1-0 to Uruguay, it's probably a step forward for Italian soccer. I'm asking you, are any of those players on that under-20 team, are they going to have an impact on the future of Italian soccer for the next World Cup?
Yeah, Lou, I mean, that's a good observation. I mean, these are the cream of the top of youth Italian players, and they showed really well in the World Cup in Argentina, coming second and just losing to Uruguay. I didn't see the final. I saw some of the games. But I guess my understanding against Uruguay, they were outplayed, probably the only game that they were outplayed. Otherwise, they had a good showing. And I just hope that, you know, there's already the top Casadei is with Chelsea, and he went from Inter Milan. They sold, and Chelsea saw so much talent in this young man. He's a midfielder that he scored 7 goals, and he won most valuable player in the World Cup, and also top scorer with a midfielder with 7 goals. So he's definitely a good prospect for the first team. And there's another young man, I forget his name now, number 10, scored a brilliant goal. I saw him on a free kick in the semi-final, and he plays for Udinese, and Mancini now keeps calling him. He says he's the first name on the list of players that for the first team. Again, I can't remember now his last name, but definitely, Lou, I think this under 20 World Cup team will be playing, a lot of them will be playing in Serie A with top teams, and will eventually make the national team. But Lou, the other thing I want to say that I forgot, staying with Canada, okay? I want to mention 4 names that they could play the national Italian team and probably make the forward even better than what we have now with the Italian national team. Tejan Buchanan, okay, Club Brugge. Then we got Laren, the center forward. I mean, the center forward that the Italian national team doesn't have a forward like Laren does. Laren, also with Club Brugge, went to playing on loan in Spain, Villarroel, which is a club that owned by Ronaldo, the old Ronaldo, not the Portuguese, the Brazilian Ronaldo. And I think they want to keep him. And he scored in the window, January window. I don't know. He played like 15 games, scored 11, scored 8 goals. And thanks to him, I think Valladolid stayed in the La Liga. And then we got, obviously, Alfonso Davis by Munich. We know what he could do with the ball and the goal he scored. And then we got David with Lille, and he's sought after by a lot of top clubs like AC Milan, Inter Milan, and maybe he's going to end up probably in England. So these four forwards that we have in Canada, they can make any top teams anywhere in the world. And Lou, it's too bad, like Walter said, that we don't get these games on TSN and on TV. We have to stream to watch our boys. And this is for another chapter for another day, Walter. It's because the mess that the Canadian soccer team made, right?
Kadmira, I'm going to have to let you go at that point. We've got to go to break. And certainly that last topic, you and I had heated discussion about it last night. I think it's just you want to grow the game of soccer in Canada, and you got to go stream a Canadian. You got to pay and stream on a website that I basically haven't heard of, or a TV station I haven't heard of. I think that's not how you grow the game of soccer in Canada. I'm sorry, but that's a topic for me.
Yes, it's a shame, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Tommy, I'm going to thank you as always. Always love. It's a great show for me. I get to talk about golf and soccer, my two great passions. So thank you so much, and we'll catch up soon. Thank you, and go Canada.
All right,
go
take
tonight.
Care, guys. Take care.
Yeah, Cadman and Mark and Tony. We're going to take it to break. We've given away two Pizzaville coupons, Jason in Scarborough, Carolyn in Etobicoke. The good people at Pizzaville want to make sure that third one's given away. Was when we come back from break, we'll give out those numbers again. And we come back, we'll have acclaimed golf journalist John Steinbreder. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7. Also streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour acclaimed golf journalist, senior editor of Global Golf Post and writer at Masters.com, our good friend John Steinbreder. John, good morning and happy Father's Day.
Good morning. Happy Father's Day to you guys. And it seems like only the other day we were chatting. So I'm glad we're doing this a little more frequently recently with the great Canadian Open. And we could still be chatting about that and that great win and that great scene. But it's great to be Father's Day to U.S. Open. And can't wait for this afternoon's play. It's going to be a great finish, I have a feeling.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be remarkable. We're still in a high from what happened last Sunday, John. Just remarkable events last Sunday at Oakdale. Jim Nance's call was a call for the ages. It's going to go up there in Canadian sports lore. The coming in and then, are you serious? Glorious. I mean, just remarkable stuff. It was a major championship for us. And highlight for a long, long time, John. But it's another major championship. We had in our neck of the woods. We've had two major championship Sundays in a row. So let's talk about the one that's happening today, the U.S. Open. And always when we get to the U.S. Open, John, there's always two stories. You get the stories about the golfers, and there's always the course is a story. In and of itself, it happens every year. The golfers complain about the course. Some years it's too difficult. After Thursday's round, some of the golfers were complaining it was too easy. Well, that sort of changed. This isn't a typical U.S. Open course, if we can even call U.S. Open courses typical, because the world is changing and golf architecture is changing, although this course has been around for a long, long time. U.S. Open courses are typically manicured to the nth degree with narrow fairways and long roughs. That's the typical one. This one's a little bit different, John, in a lot of different ways. So let's have a little chat about the L.A. Country Club. It made me run to a dictionary and figure out what a barranca is. Apparently, it's a narrow, winding, steep-walled gully or river gorge, and that's getting the golfers in a lot of trouble. Your observations of the L.A. Country Club North and how it fits in as a U.S. Open course.
Well, I happen to love it. I've been fortunate enough to play it before. I've walked it. I'm a huge fan of George Thomas, the architect, not the original architect. Herb Fowler did the original course. Thomas revamped it some years later when he left Philadelphia and was out in the Los Angeles area and did Bel Air and Riviera, and then did this revamping out at LACC. You know, George, who's just a brilliant man, I shouldn't even call him George, Mr. Thomas, he liked to be called the captain because he was a captain in the Army Air Force or some air brigade during World War One. He grew roses, wrote a book about roses, was a great horticulturalist, raised hunting dogs, and just a real Renaissance man who designed his first golf course on his parents' estate in Philadelphia. So a man of means, a man of great talent and vision. And one of the things that he really liked was this whole concept of a course within a course. So what makes this so interesting from a U.S. Open standpoint is they can really take a hole and play it 490 one day and play it 340 the next day. You can move tees around. You can move and give it like that variety that is really fun. And I don't know if there's a better par three. I mean, there's some that are as good, but that 15th hole is just spectacular. It was great to watch them play to that. And I love the golf course. I think it's such a nice break. I think it's more interesting. It's, you can see the elevation changes. The setting is just second to none. It's like, as a guy who grew up outside of New York, it's like having 36 holes in Central Park. I mean, you just can't believe that there's a golf course in the middle of that metropolis like that, and you haven't lived till you're trying to hit a shot on, I forget what hole it is, but the one that runs alongside the old Playboy Mansion. They got monkeys in these cages there. They got birds, and it sounds like you're in some sort of, tropical paradise. And I guess in the old days they had a lot of Hugh Hefner's models out by the swimming pool, so they used to have pace of play issues, I think, as people went farther as well. But I love Thomas's work. I think he's unheralded as somebody who designed three such incredible courses as those could be considered unheralded. And it's a departure from your standard U.S. Open sort of a course, and the setting is, and I'm really enjoying every minute of it. The running a little late at prime time for me back here at home. I mean, at my age, I'm getting to bed a little early than I used to. But other than that, I'm enthralled with the golf course and the demand it's putting on the players. And just it's different, you know. I mean, I like U.S. Open courses, but it's just different from the average normal U.S. Open course. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
What do you think of the par 3 81-yard hole, John?
Yeah, that's just, you know, I think that's great. I still can't believe the shot Scheffler hit in there. Of course, he missed a birdie. But, you know, and again, having played that hole, it's, you know, it's a classic thing. You look at the card, you say, oh, thank goodness I have a little reprieve here. And you get up there, and it's just, it's so tricky and it's so fun. And I love it. I mean, it's one thing I love about, you know, the Straits course that they've had, you know, the Ryder Cup in 21 and obviously some PGAs. And, you know, they've got four par threes in that course, and one of those, and I think it's number 12, is, you know, plays 90 to 100 yards, and it's right on the shores of Lake Michigan, and it just it makes everybody plays it a little bit crazy because you really have to hit a precise shot. And so I think it's great to have a hole like this. I love short fours and I love short threes. There should be at least one of each on a good golf course.
Lou?
Playing the last three holes, I hear that they are the three longest holes in PGA history, and back to back. How tough are they to play since you have played it there? And why have we never heard of the LA Country Club without so many places that so many other golf courses within the LA area?
Well, I mean, to speak to the holes, I think they want a, you know, a strong steering finish, stroke play. So it's not like match play where you worry about, you know, the matches could be over by the time you get to those last three holes. So they really want to give them some tests coming in. And again, they can stretch these darn things out so long these days. Gil Hance, who sort of did a revamping with Jeff Shackelford some time ago on this, and they were able to do that and just make it, you know, make the finish very competitive. I mean, the golf club started back in, I think, the first course that Herb Fowler did. The first course was open in 21, and it's just been a very under-the-radar place. And, you know, you consider in the early part of the 20th century, you've got, you know, golf in Cyprus, which was, you know, pretty well known, and Pebble pretty well known, but still not, you know, it was still out west. It was still a little bit under the radar. And even there in LA, this was pretty under the radar. Then it was very exclusive, exclusionary in different ways, via, you know, ethnicity and religion, I'm sure, was an issue for a while. And one of the things, like a lot of courses, unfortunately, in clubs in the, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and they also had this incredible disdain for actors. And so they did not have any actors as a member there for years, except for one, who was Randall Scott, who I guess the thinking was, is the reason they let him in is that he really wasn't much of an actor. So as far as they were concerned, he didn't really qualify as one. Then the next actor they let into the club happened to be a guy named Ronald Reagan, but that was only after he'd been elected president, I think. So they've kind of been a very under-the-radar place, no Hollywood types. They hadn't, gosh, I can't think off the top of my head, Lou, the last time they hosted a tournament of note, but they really have stayed under the radar. And then they started to come back. They started to hold this George Thomas Invitational, which is one of the great mid-amateur and senior amateur invitationals in the country. And that started to bring some attention to the club and to the course. And I think they had some people there who really spoke to that and spoke to how good it would be to kind of come out of the, you know, the shadows a little bit and share this great thing with the golf world. And you know, Cyprus is going to be hosting the Walker Cup soon. Seminole hosted the Walker Cup not too long ago. National Golf Links in 2014. And it's fantastic, this sort of trend to get in these under-the-radar courses that are great courses, great clubs out into the broader realm of golf. And unlike those others, LACC is big enough and happy enough to to host a U.S. Open as well, and they're going to do it again down the road. And that's really cool, I think, for golf to be able to see and bring this out for all of us to enjoy.
We're talking to Global Golf's host, John Steinbrenner. John, I get a sense that this is going to be a wild, wild afternoon, or I guess it's not an afternoon here. It's going to be a wild evening of golf in the Eastern time zone. You've got five par threes. You've got birdies going on everywhere. You got bogeys going on everywhere. It's almost like a Stableford competition in some ways. You got drivable par fours. You got 80. I don't know what the par three is going to be today. Maybe 100 yards that you can't. It's difficult to get near the pin. You've got this wild grass that if you get in, you got to hack out of. You got Bermuda rough, which they grow that. Good luck hacking out of that stuff. So there's going to be, everything's going to be going on this afternoon. Let's talk about some of the players. Fowler and Wyndham Clark, leaderboard, tied for the lead. Then you got Rory and Scotty. And you got Schauffele is there, and DJ's lurking. Man, you got a pretty good leaderboard. What if you're going to make a guess of what we're going to see this afternoon? What are we going to see tonight for us?
There's like you said, it's a great leaderboard. And just real quick, when you started talking about the course, and I missed a few things, par 75, par 3s, some drivable par 4s that they can set up that way. Again, this course within the course thing, so different from a standard U.S. Open course, and I think in that regard it is really fun. But as we were just talking about, they can really stretch out holes, and that finish in 16, 17, 18 is going to be pretty tough. But to get back to the players, first of all, with Ricky Fowler, I would just borrow from Jim Mantz saying, are you serious? I mean,
yeah.
I think it's great for golf. I've interviewed Ricky a few times. He's not a guy who wears a lot of emotion on his sleeve, so he's not the greatest interview I've ever had. But he's certainly a compelling figure and a very popular figure in the game. And, you know, when you see somebody who was so down and out, I think he was a first alternate last year for the Open, maybe, or, you know, I mean, he's just, his game went to hell in a handbasket, and he's his comeback working with Butch Harmon again and what he's done, it's one of the great stories in golf. And so I think that alone is going to, it's must-watch TV. And then, of course, you got Rory, he's going to be paired with Scottie Scheffler, and, you know, two better people on the planet that are not in the game of golf. I mean, they're just two of the best. And not far back at all. I mean, in one shot for Rory and three for Scotty, and then Harris English and Xander. DJ, as you say, tied for six with Xander. I mean, you know, that's five back. That's kind of where you got right there. That's your bunch. And I tell you, people are going to be tuning in. I think it's going to be really, really exciting. A lot of pressure on Ricky's part. That bogey in 18 was too bad yesterday. He was played yesterday at even par, but I guarantee you, I'm not out there walking the course and seeing it, but I know after what happened on Thursday, they toughened that course up on Friday and Saturday, so I think even par yesterday is not a bad score. It's really going to be fun, I think. Gosh, in any of those, you know, and Clark is great and playing well, and the least compelling of that group from a, you know, a story standpoint, but he's still someone to watch, and if he can, you know, get over himself without having to play too late in the day, I think it's going to be a hell of a ride.
John, we've only got a minute and a half left. I'm picking Scheffler. Who you got?
You know, this is why I've never bet sports in my life, because I always bet with my heart, and I just think Fowler is, I think Ricky's going to come up big today, and I think it's going to be huge. I really do. He's hitting the ball so well, tee to green yesterday, I thought, and he's just, I think there's a lot of energy. I think Butch and he probably had some nice conversations. I think he was hitting the ball very, very well, and that would be my top choice. And I'm so tired of rooting for Rory, so I just can't do it anymore. I'm just going to let him be. Because I think he's great, but God, Rory's been carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders, and both competitively and what he's got to try to do for himself, and also with this whole live golf thing. So
yeah,
I don't know if he can get up there, but I'm going with Fowler, and Scheffler would be mine too.
Anyways, John, this is the end of our ninth season on the air, and I can't think of anybody better than to finish it with you. Thanks so much for thanks so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking golf with you. And we'll catch up in the fall, hopefully.
I can't wait, guys. Take care. Have a great Father's Day. And here's to a great open finish.
It's certainly, certainly we look forward to that. John Steinbrenner, really quickly, Lou, who you got this afternoon?
I got Rory. He's going to kill the back nine.
Naz, who you got?
Wally, I agree with you. Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah, if he can get his magic, if he can get his putter working, he's pretty impressive ball striker these days. Anyways, Naz, our ninth season has come to a close. It's been fantastic once again. Certainly, we've had some incredible highlights, and we got one last Sunday. So we're still, we always joked around, we're going to stay on the air till the Leafs win the Stanley Cup. So we may be on here for a while.
Yes, sir.
We may be on here for a while. So, Lou, I always thank you. You've been, you've helped us out quite a bit, and we appreciate all your support over the years and especially this year. Thanks so much, Lou.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me, and have a great summer.
And to all of our listeners, thanks so much for your support. To our sponsors, thank you so much for your support. And as that classic song from the 1960s said, God willing, we'll see you in September. Have a
good morning. I'm Jeremy Logan with your Zoomer Radio News. A sun cloud mix for your Father's Day Sunday, a high of 25.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.